Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't, lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Hello, this is Patrick with New Jersey's Outdoor Adventures YouTube channel. I'm here in Ocean Grove, New Jersey, beautiful Ocean Grove, hanging out in my van for the day, and I bumped into a very nice gentleman named Kenny. Kenny has a 2002 Explorer van conversion. It's a camper van conversion, and he was nice enough. He's going to offer us a tour today. Hello, Kenny.
Hey, Patrick. How you doing?
I'm all right. So tell us a little bit about your van and how you're using it, and maybe show us around, outside and inside, if you have time.
I'd love to. Well, this is a 2002 Explorer, and I had a van before this. It was a pleasure way. But I had seen this on YouTube, and I had always been looking for one. When I got this one, it was in Arizona. I saw it on Craigslist, got it in Arizona, flew out the next day, picked it up, and drove it back. At the time when I first got it, it was from the desert. It was very dry, has no rust on it whatsoever. But it was in a desert, and everything was really dry, so I had to really kind of get involved in it and get it, get it working. And oiled in a sense, and so I did have to kind of revive it in a lot of ways. One of the first things I did was that it had the graphics on it. I got rid of all the graphics, which was kind of difficult, but I eventually got them all off, which I was happy to do. One of the reasons that I like this van, and I was interested in it, was it had the dually wheels in the back. From the experience that I had and from people that I had talked to about these things, these vehicles are generally very top heavy, and this thing always, anything I ever heard about it, reports and whatnot, with the dualies, it drove really well. And to my very happy to say that it really drives, it's a fantastic driving vehicle. You could drive around turns, you could go 80 miles an hour if you wanted to, and it's steady as a rock, which is really nice. So I'm very, very happy about that. And that was one of the selling points for me. The reason that I wanted to buy it was because it had that dually conversion in the back, and I had heard that it handled really well, and it was true. The engine is the Dodge, the 5.9 liter, which is a real nice engine. It's a monster of an engine. It thinks it cranks out a lot of power. If you want, I could like kind of bring you around and just give you an idea of what's happening on the outside of it.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Our viewers are very interested in learning a little bit about this van and what features it has, and maybe a couple tips and maybe some modifications you've done to make it work better for you.
Well, the modifications that I've done really are really just upkeep. It continually needs upkeep. One of the things that I got originally when I got it was the refrigerator was blown out, so I changed the refrigerator. So it's got a new refrigerator in it, which makes it a big difference with those three-way refrigerator. So that's one of the first things that I did to it. I changed the refrigerator. It's got an awning, which is really nice to have. That was another thing that I really wanted to have. It's not out now, but it's when the sun is hot, it's really a good thing to have. This is the refrigerator here. Let me get my keys.
Sure. Those are just the outside vents we're looking at.
Yeah, these are just the outside vents for the refrigerator. It's all standard. It's all, this is the heater. This is the hot water heater. One of the other nice things about this is it has a storage area here, which actually comes out. You can pull this whole rack out.
You got a whole bike in there?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, this comes all the way out. So I have a folding bike on there. I've got my tools in here. And it goes all the way back. And then there's a top compartment here that goes all the way through.
Oh, you look at that. It goes all the way through.
Yeah, it goes all the way through. Yeah.
And does it pull out the other side, too? Or is it just one side?
The generator.
Okay.
So, but it pulls out to about here.
Okay.
It's stuff now. I'd have to take stuff out to pull it out, so I'm not going to do that. But anyway, that's a nice thing to have.
And the water heater... What does that run on? Is that gas or electric?
Yeah, it's gas, propane.
Gas, okay. And the heat as well?
Propane and propane.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 2002 vehicle, so, some of the newer vehicles obviously are going to go through electric. You got to do the DC with the lithium batteries and the solar panels. This has a solar panel on it. It originally came with a solar panel, but it's a very small one. It's a 15-watt solar panel, which is my next thing that I'm going to do, is to put I'm thinking maybe 165-watt solar panel on there, or 100-watt. We talked about it today a little bit. But right now, that 15-watt solar panel with the two regular batteries that it has in there, on a sunny day like today, it recharges everything really nicely. Back here, obviously, it's got it's just another storage compartment.
And this is a fiberglass back to it?
Yeah. This has just got, a lot of different stuff in it.
These are all utility items?
Utilities, that kind of stuff. Backup camera. This is a Dodge 3500. So what they did was they cut it here, and then they added this part over here.
So overall, the length is?
It's 21 feet.
21 feet, okay.
And it's the maximum... For a parking spot, if you want to park anywhere, this is the maximum that will be illegal to be in a parking spot.
You can see where he's parked here, right in a regular parking lot. We're in Ocean Grove, right next to Asbury Park, and he fits right in. And, you look at my van over there, I fit right in, too.
So, obviously, the air conditioning is up there. One of the nice things about this particular unit is it doesn't have a roof air conditioner like the regular RVs. It's got a regular house air conditioner inside. So, one of the next things that I want to do, this air conditioner works fine, but you can get a modern, very efficient air conditioner and put it up there. In search of the regular window air conditioner.
Maybe some of our viewers are familiar with that. On like a Road Track or Pleasureway, they do something similar. They inset it into the roof.
Yeah, it's first of all, it's expensive. it has to go through the roof. It's inset into the roof, so there has to be a special, you know, mount made for it so it goes through the roof, so you have the controls on the roof. This is, when we go inside, you'll see it's mounted, it's flush mounted in, on the inside interior of the vehicle, and it's just a regular AC, which is nice. So if anything happens to it, you're not, you know, you don't have to buy a very, very expensive unit, and it's readily available.
You could go to Costco or an appliance store and get
right.
one.
Yeah,
okay.
This is cool. This here, as you can see, it's a 230 wide body. This is the generator here. So it's got a 4,000
4,000 kW. That's gasoline.
Right.
That runs on gasoline.
Yeah, this runs on gasoline. This runs off the fuel tank.
Well, that's a pretty big power plant for a small motorhome like this.
Yeah,
I see most of them with like a 2,500 or 2,800.
Yeah, this will do it.
When they designed this, they really thought it through, and you got some space above
right.
the generator.
It still goes through, which is nice. And usually generators are pretty loud from the interior, but this thing, because the bed is over here, it sits on top of it, so it kind of muffles the sound of the generator, which is nice. These are all your, you know, outside electric. This is, your electric landline.
So it looks like a 30-amp, 125-volt.
Yeah, 30-amp.
Okay.
This is also water, and this is water. If you're in an RV park, you can plug that in there.
And how many gallons of water can you hold for fresh water?
Well, what I do is, I don't live here. I have lived in this for 7 months.
Wow.
So I was on the road with it. But lately I've just been, coming out to the, I live in Manhattan, so I've been coming out to the shore and hanging out here. I've been out here for 3 weeks. So I hold 25 gallons of fresh water, plus I have a 5-gallon reserve tank. So if I ever do run really low, I still have that 5-gallon reserve. So. And then I have, regular bottles of water and stuff. So I'm carrying about 35 gallons of water with me most of the time.
Do you find troublesome to get water out on the road, or if you're
around?
I've
been out on the road, and I've always figured out a way to get water.
Okay.
Because water, when you're on the road and when you learn how to live in these things and to use them, what you'll do is you'll find your eye is keen on all of those areas where you think you may be able to find water. Like what I did when I was in on the road, I would go to the beaches, and the beaches would have, water around. And also, I don't really drink the water because I don't have a real water filter. I have a water filter to put it in, but generally I'm just using water to wash dishes and to take a shower,
that kind of thing.
So I wasn't really always super concerned about the water content because I wasn't drinking out of it. So you can find water pretty much everywhere. You just got to keep an eye out for it. The beauty about this is the dually wheels. We talked about that, which is nice. Right. This is obviously a dump tank. So, that's your valve for your dump.
So is it a combination gray-black tank?
It's a separate tank.
But the
spigot coming out is, they both flow into it to come out.
So it's like a Y pipe behind there.
Yeah, correct. Right.
And
here are these are the dump tanks.
Just in case some of the viewers don't know, there's two tanks in most of these RVs, and a black tank would be toilet waste, and gray tank would be shower waste.
Yeah, it says body waste and liquid waste.
Okay.
Right.
And the hole next
to
it, I guess, is where you store your waste hose?
Yeah, but I keep it in the back.
Separate.
Because it's never long enough.
No.
Those things are never long enough. The other thing, too, is when you're doing these things, at least the way I always do it, is I always, if I'm going to do the waste tank, these waste tanks, I always do the body fluids first, and then I do the regular, soapy stuff, dishwasher stuff, shower stuff, afterwards, the wastewater, just the gray water, so it clears out the everything.
Sounds like a good tip for our viewers. I see, what are these yellow things under your tires?
This has a propane refrigerator. It's got a three-way refrigerator. It's got the, so it'll run off a connection from the house, a house connection. It'll run off your batteries and DC when you're on the road, when you're driving, or it'll run off propane. When I'm sitting here, I'm running it off propane. So this, what these do is they level, it's part of the leveling system. This particular vehicle has airbags in the back, but it does not have airbags in the front. So I can level it in the back this way and lift it up this way, but I use these you know, to overall level it depending on the angle of the...
So it would be not only for your refrigerator, make it run more efficient, it would also be for your drains. I guess if you're parked really crooked...
Yeah, but, you know, I'm never going to, you know, in a vehicle like this, unless it was a 4x4, which is not, you know, I'm not too worried about... I'm always going to be on, you know, a grade that's a mid-grade. I'm not going to be anything too extreme, obviously. You know, obviously, the answer
Sorry, what engine do they put in this?
It's a 5.9.
5.9,
yeah,
okay.
It's the big one. It's the big engine, which is really nice to have. I mean, it's got a lot of oomph, a lot of power.
I see you got some windows up top.
Yeah, these are just, you know, they have curtains on them. And basically what they did was is they on this particular vehicle. Now, this vehicle was, it's kind of a rare vehicle. It's really tough to get. And I looked for 2 years for this vehicle. It's what I wanted, you know, as you learn about these things and you learn what you need and what you don't need, you know, you change and you learn different things, what you might want and might not want. I thought this was the penultimate vehicle, and it is a great vehicle, I love it, okay? But, you know, if I was to get something else, there would be certain things that I would probably want different. But the thing is that had, it has a raised top. As you can see, it's a gel-coated top, and those are lights for extra light when you're in a sunny area or you want to shade yourself. The nice thing about this is it's got the screens.
You got some privacy with the curtains too.
The curtains.
Need that.
Yeah. I mean, it's got all of that. There are certain things that I need to do to the vehicle. But, you know, you can't do everything, so you do things that work for you. I put this up because I was getting something to drip inside. The gasket up here is a little bit dried up. So, but that prevents the water from coming in. Basically, you're walking into the vehicle, it'll open up this way. This is an outside shower, so you can use this as an outside shower. This pulls out. It's got about a 15-foot hose on it.
Oh, wow.
So you can, you know, what I normally do is I'll put it out over on here on this side, and, you know, I'll take a shower that way, which is pretty cool. I'll give you a quick show of it. This is also, here's a cabinet, so you can get it from either end. I got tools. I have a lot of tools in the vehicle because I'm always, you know, fiddling around doing stuff. So, I mean, basically, you just pull this out here. This will go all the way out like this. Now, I have an oxygenator head. Now, for people who don't know that, it's a highly efficient head that uses very little bit of water, and basically it gives you a very heavy-duty pulse and flow of water, which is real nice to, when you're taking a shower. So what I'll do is I'll put it on here. I'll bring this over. I'll put this in, which I got from Walmart. Put this like this,
uh-huh.
Like that, and then basically with the oxygenator, there's your shower.
That's great. I love it.
So it works great, you know. I'd rather it's. I mean, it has an interior bathroom. You can take a shower. Your vehicle has a really nice setup. You don't really have to. It's not as, you know. You just walk in there and take a shower. It's great. I love it. But this one's a little bit not as convenient. You want to come on in?
Absolutely.
Right. So, here's the interior. I don't know where you want to start, but basically, it's only me here. It's only me. So what I did was, I got the a nice mattress for me. I mean, two people could fit on here.
Is that a residential, like, twin-size mattress?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I got a regular residential twin-size mattress. And this way, I allowed myself to have seating over here as well. You can put a table here, which is real nice.
That's what that socket is on the floor? Right, okay.
Yeah, I'll show you. So this goes, so I pull this here, like this, pull this out.
Looks like a pretty heavy table. It looks, back when they built this is a pretty high quality motorhome.
Yeah. And like that. And that's it. So, it also gives me more surface to work on. All right. Also, I have a TV back here, which is cool.
you know, which comes out, you know, and you can, here's the air conditioner I was talking about. So you can see this is a regular household unit.
That's brilliant. I like that idea.
Yeah, it's much better, you know.
How's the noise level compared to a typical RV air conditioning?
It doesn't bother me.
No?
Well, look, if you're in your house and you put the air conditioner on, is the air conditioner going to be totally silent? Unless you have central air conditioning. But if you're in a room and you have a window unit, usually there's some vibration and some noise. But the fact is that it's a lot cooler than it was before. So that's really what you're concerned with. And I don't really, I'm not the type of person that really needs a lot of air conditioning. So what I'll do at nighttime is I'll open up all of the windows because they'll have levers on them or they come up and they have screens on them and everything. So I can open up all the windows and I'll put a fan, like this small fan here. So I have a few of these. These are brilliant. These are great fans. These are computer fans. So if you can get these, if you're in a van and you can get these computer fans, these are great because they're like, they take no power whatsoever.
Now, is that plugged into a USB?
USB, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know? So you get a few of these things and you've got, you know, you get a lot of...
It says O2 cool.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's that kind of thing. Now, you know, as in any kind of situation like this, and Patrick will know, and I guess anybody that's watching that's interested in this will know, every section of the van, every little thing of the van is a place where you just store things so that you can keep them and then take them out when you need them, but they have to be put back. So every little corner that you have in these particular vehicles, you use it in some way or another. So I have these boxes back here, which are really kind of cool. I use one for my bottles of water, and then I use another one for laundry and that kind of stuff, which is nice.
And then these systems down here on the floor?
This is basically your heater. So if it's cold out, this is the propane heater.
Okay.
And that'll heat up the vehicle. They use a lot of uses a lot of propane, but it really heats the place up nice. This is just your electrical system. Your fuse box is all.
So fuse is in there. Yeah. Probably a battery charger.
Yeah. The other nice thing about this particular vehicle is that the water tank is inside the vehicle. So that was another thing that I liked about it. The water tank and the ones that I had before, the water tank was usually outside of the vehicle, underneath the vehicle.
So you can really extend your season, do some cold weather camping.
You can definitely, you know, you keep everything warmer. So the water tank, the 25-gallon water tank is in here. Now these are the heaters are in here. Okay, so this is all storage, you know, storage. This is storage, shelves. You know, I put the shelves in. It's one of the things that I did because I don't, you know, if you're in one of these vehicles, you're not wearing a suit.
This was like a hanging shirt locker?
Yeah, you're not wearing a suit, and you're not too worried about hanging shirts. You know, you're worried about, you know, what bathing suit you're going to wear. At least that's what you should be thinking about. This?
Solo cup on the ceiling.
This is basically, the thing is, this is an LED light, okay? But it's very bright.
I have that problem in mind.
Okay, so what I did was I just took a cup and put it up here so it directs the light downward. It's a much softer light. And plus the red of the cup gives it a little bit of a glow. And that's it. You know, this is an electronics box. You know, it's got the stuff for the DVD, electronics in here.
So when I walked in, I saw an inverter there by the door, but I see another inverter here. Is that a point of use one for maybe
this is
the
just
TV?
That's just a TV and a DVD.
Okay.
You know? I mean, the TV is that you can plug into a regular USB, but the DVD player you can't. So I just looked it up that way. This is, you know, food storage. That kind of thing. I just pull them out. I got these things here.
These are nice bins. That keeps it quiet maybe when you're driving so things are rattling around.
Yeah. Plus it keeps it, you know, you pull it out easy. You don't have to go looking all the way in the back. That kind of thing. Fan, you know, I forget the name of the fan. What is it?
That looks like a fantastic fan.
Fantastic fan.
And that was their King Deluxe model. It looks like it's remote control.
No, it's not remote control.
No?
No.
Rain sensor. I see the sticker
sensor
there.
Yeah.
Variable speed. We got a thermostat control.
Right.
And a motorized lid.
Yeah.
All right. That's their top model from back then.
Back in the day. And this is the bathroom. So it's a gel-coated bathroom.
You know, this is pretty impressive. Now, looking at this, It's all seamless, where the sink is integrated into the walls.
Yeah, it's all seamless.
Got a stainless steel sink.
Right.
What else we got going on there?
Well, basically, that's it. I mean, the way I use it is, you know, I just take that stuff out of it and take a shower. Take the flowers out and then take a shower. Let's say you pull this curtain and you're done. You
know? I guess there's some type of storage underneath the sink?
Yeah, I mean, it's just basically, you know, more toilet papers underneath.
It's got a gasket on it so it doesn't get wet
in there.
Right,
exactly. I mean, back for the day, it was pretty cool.
And this is just a regular RV-style toilet, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's, you know, the regular.
Okay. So it's not a composting toilet.
No. It's a black toilet.
And you got a little vent on the top?
Yeah, fan and a vent, which is nice to have. If you're taking a shower, it takes all the steam out and rid of the whole thing. And that's it. LED lights all around.
Yeah, they are bright.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually I like the way this is set up. I know some people that have put, you know, one door here or put a glass door or they put like a slide. But this is nice because if you're dressing, you can dress back here. You just close this door and you have privacy, which is nice to have. So it's a good setup. I like the setup. This is okay. So just more of the same. I mean, regular stove.
So all your spices are...
No, refrigerated, not too much in there now, but probably beer, that's about it.
It looks like a 3-cubic foot.
Yeah, it's very good. But this is a new refrigerator. You know, it's electronic, freeway.
Okay. So all the controls are up top.
Yeah, I mean, it works automatically.
And the cooking situation, two-burner?
Two-burner, yeah. I generally just using one burner because I'm usually... you know, when I'm not traveling... It's just as easy for me to go somewhere and have something to eat or get some takeout food or something like that, you know. So I usually do that. But, you know, I've got soup, I got hot dogs, I got beer, you know, that kind of thing. You know, snacks, you know, some vegetables if I want it. This is more storage. I put my water up here.
There's a lot of storage in this van.
This is just plastic containers, that kind of stuff. This is a convection microwave oven.
Will that run off your inverter system, or you have to run the generator?
No, that runs off the generator.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to have that. That and the AC. Right. Now, this table will come out. One of the things that I did do, which anybody that has an Explorer, if you see this setup and you have this particular setup in Explorer, one of the best things I did on this thing for me was to put this seat in, which turns. It's a swivel seat. The Explorer, what it had was a stationary seat, only that one went that way, which really made it kind of limited as to how you could use it. But with this thing, you can go like this, and obviously there's a lot more room in it.
And did it come stock with the front swivel seats?
Yeah, everything here, the front. I mean, this obviously can be removed, so this is movable. This is the driver wall. I just keep it up because it's just an extra space here. Yeah, more storage here. These are your controls. These are your black water, gray water tanks. This is your, tells you how your battery is and your levels on your tanks. This is the generator. You know, so you go here, hopefully it'll start.
It's a lot quieter than my generator.
See how quiet that is?
Yeah.
So with the AC, you can hardly, you know, and when you're...
They probably cancel each other out.
Pretty much,
noise,
yeah. Yeah. And that'll, you know, that powers up, you know, everything you need that for. This is just more storage.
A lot of storage in this.
You know, just more stuff like that. And, you know, if I wanted to, I can put the table back down here, over here, and I can put a couple of mats here, and I can get some more sleeping area if I have somebody that wants to sleep over, or I can do with the...
Probably be like a queen-size bed
at
that point?
Yeah, or I can turn the seats around. No, we're talking camping out here. We're not talking about, you know, like...
It's not a Holiday Inn.
Thing. Right, yeah. So basically you could turn these seats around so that they're facing one another, and you could put a mat in between that, and you could sleep there if you had to as well, which I've done, especially with the kids. This, of course, that's the backup camera. Backup screen.
It looks like up here is the air suspension controls for
the
rear.
Right, these are the air suspension controls here.
So it's got an onboard air compressor.
I don't know if you can see that. Yeah, so it's either one of those, right. So you turn the engine on and you can level out the vehicle with this.
which is very cool. Everything is LED lights.
I like how you utilized every space. Even the dashboard has stuff on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do, you know. Here's my other 5-gallon can. This is my extra can of water here. And here's something that I do, you know, just to preserve water. Because when you're heating up, sometimes I feel like heating up the water. Sometimes I know that I want to wash my body a little bit or something, do, you know, just a quick body wash. So I'll need a little bit more water. So instead of heating water up on the stove to preserve it, because when your supplies are really important when you're doing this stuff. So you have to keep an eye on everything that you use and how you use it. So you try to minimize everything. So when I heat up the water, it takes a few seconds for the water to come into the faucet area when I heat up the water. So what I'll do is I'll take my one of my pots and put the faucet on and run it and let the water get into the pot before the hot water comes. So then that water I'll put in here and put it back into the tank. I mean, it's those silly things that you do, but these are the kind of things that you do to preserve your supplies. So that's because, and I actually found that I'm saving 1 or 2 gallons of water a week easily. Normally you turn the faucet on and wait for the hot water to come in. But if I turn the faucet on and I have a pot underneath and I put it in here, I'm saving 2 gallons of water. And when you're on the road, 2 gallons of water is a lot.
Do you have any tips for any new people that might be interested in getting a van and living this type of lifestyle? Anything over you have a lot more experience than I do,
yeah.
That maybe people overlook or maybe some hassles you might have had throughout your process?
Well, I think one of the things that you want to do more than anything is to figure out what it is that you're actually going to do. Are you going to be staying on the road? Are you going to be traveling around? Where are you going to be? Because you have to think about the supplies that you have. How are you going to carry your water? How much water you think you're going to need? And your energy. So it's the water and the energy. The other thing is, do I want to have a bathroom or do I not want to have a bathroom? Okay, a lot of people, what they'll do is they have a pot and they'll do whatever they have to do within the pot, you know, put it in a bag, they'll bag it and do all that kind of stuff. So the things that you, and also your sleeping arrangements, how many people do you want? How many people are you going to be? Are you going to be alone? So it's, when you're thinking about it, you also want to have a vehicle that you feel you're going to be comfortable in. I'm like 5'8". So I can fit in pretty much anything pretty comfortably. But if you're bigger, if you're like 6 foot, you have to take that into account too as to what kind of vehicle you're going to have. So I think your energy supplies, do you want solar or do you want to have a generator? Do you want to have a generator that's on the vehicle or you want to have a generator that you can just like put on the ground somewhere so you can run it, so you can run your generator to run an air conditioner or something? Do you want an air conditioner? So it's the type of life that you're willing to live. Are you going to be alone or are you going to be with someone? If you're going to be with somebody, then you have to make those kind of decisions as to how it will be to live in a small space with someone. So you want to be easily accessible. One of the reasons I liked this one was when I was on the road for 7 months, I was with my girlfriend, and it didn't have a front area where I could sit and like do work or go on my computer or anything like that, which this has. So I found it really difficult in terms of trying to do the things that I wanted to do. And also our sleeping arrangement was different. She would sleep really super early and I would go to sleep later on because I'd like to sit on my computer and do things. So I think it's the first things you have to think about is the space that you want in the vehicle. Is a bathroom going to be important for you? How are you going to take showers? How are you going to provide energy for yourself in terms of being able to charge your computer, charge your phone, and charge the things that you need? Have lights in the vehicle? And do you want to have hot water? So these are all the kind of considerations that you're going to have. Are you going to be in a cold area or are you going to be in a warm area? And then, of course, as I said before, the type of vehicle it is in the space that you have. So, and what it came down to me also is, does this vehicle drive well? Am I going to be comfortable driving this vehicle? Where am I going to go with it? Am I going to go off-road, or am I going to just stay in park in Walmarts and that type of thing? So there's a lot of different considerations that you, and the length of time that you're going to be in the vehicle. So it's a lot of that. I would suggest that you look on YouTube, look at all the different people that have the different, you know, vehicles that you might be interested in, and I would really take a good look at that and to see how they do it and what they feel works for them and what doesn't work for them. If you don't have a vehicle with any kind of insulation, or you don't have windows that have screens on them, you're going to find, and you're in a place where there's a lot of mosquitoes at nighttime, and you have to keep the windows closed, you're going to find that the heat inside the vehicle is going to be unbearable, and you're not going to be able to really survive that kind of environment very long in a comfortable way. So that's the other thing. The nice thing about this vehicle is that most of the windows here have screens on them. And I think something that's also very important, and a lot of this particular vehicle, one of the things I do not like about this vehicle is the back window doesn't open. It's a huge back window, but it doesn't open. And because of the way they made the vehicle, there's no back door. They removed the back door. I find that having a back door and being able to open the vehicle really allows the air to come in and come through, especially if you're in a hot environment, you're at a beach or anything like that. And I think that's a really important consideration, if how much access you have to the open space around the vehicle. It really makes it a lot nicer if you have a lot of fresh air coming in and you have a lot of light coming into the vehicle. So that would be a consideration. One of the modifications that I want to do for this vehicle, if I keep it, is I want to get a window that will open up in the back. I'm going to modify it so that I have a big window that opens up so that I can open it up. And also, it's just a lot nicer. So that would be another consideration. So I think that, you know, it's energy, the kind of supplies that you're going to have in terms of water, your ability to survive on the road. So it's energy, water, food, air, ventilation.
What about safety? Safety in regards to securing yourself and your personal items in the motorhome, especially people that are traveling across country going to areas they don't know about crime and how safe they're going to be. I recently read a story online about a couple that was traveling up to Alaska, and their van broke down, and they were unfortunately murdered. What do you say anything about safety to be mindful of?
Well, I think that when you you develop a sense of what's going to be safe, what's dangerous, I think it just comes with time and experience. If you're traveling in populated areas, there are always places that you can go where you'll feel more safe, even if you get chased away. If you feel that you need to be somewhere and that you're concerned about your safety and whatnot, but you're afraid that you're going to be chased away because it's an area where they may not want a van in or anything, I would take the chance on being chased away and do that. I mean, there's always Walmart. There's always shopping centers that you can go to. I think you have to be cognizant. You have to be very aware and cognizant of the fact that there is danger out there. I always keep my keys real close to me. I always keep the vehicle at nighttime ready to go so that if I have to jump on in the chair and pull out really quickly, I can do that. So I'll have my keys right next to me somewhere. I'll have the seats and everything configured so I can move quickly. Obviously, you're going to lock your doors.
Obviously, if you're going to have, you know, your windows blocked, you know, to tell you the truth, I prefer not to block my windows. All right, because I like to see what's going on around me. And if people are going to be looking in and whatnot, I like to also be able to look out to see what's going on. So, but it depends. If I want to be, generally I'll leave my windows open. A lot of people will put curtains up and stuff like that. At nighttime in the back of the van, you really can't see in back of the van. If you're looking in at nighttime, you really can't see in the back. You can't see if I'm there or not. Now, if I'm not in the van, if I'm not going to be in this van, if I'm going to go, let's say, take a walk, or if I'm going to take a hike or something, I will close it off completely so nobody knows if anybody's in there or not.
That's a really good tip.
Okay. So when I'm not in the van, I always keep it closed so nobody can see in. So they're going to think twice before they start trying to get in. And I think that, and I think if you feel that way too, as well, I mean, you know, obviously if you park somewhere and you have everything all covered, people really don't know if there's anybody in there or not. So and they don't know whether you have a weapon.
The fear of the unknown.
You know, in there. So they're going to be careful about it. But you got to watch where you go. You got to know where you're going. And you got to be prepared.
What inspired you to get into this lifestyle? Because this is a lifestyle. It's not just a van.
I don't know. I mean, what inspired me? I started looking. There was a guy on YouTube we were talking about before called Justin Credible. Justin Credible, if you ever see this, thanks a lot, bro. He had the same van, and there was something about it that was really cool about it. But as I think about it, what happened was is that my girlfriend and I, we went to California, and we rented a car, and we were driving up Route 1 in California, and we're going into all these hotels at nighttime. And one day we're on one of the overlooks. We're looking at the water. We stop to take a rest, and some family pulls up in a 4x4 Westfalia, which is a Volkswagen with the pop-up top, and it's a 4x4. And you know, they all piled out, and I was like, that is like the coolest thing that I've ever seen before. Okay, how cool is that? And they were, you know, they lived in California, and they were traveling around. I mean, I had known about this stuff before, but I never thought about it. But when you see it, it's like, why would I want to travel any other way? So I got the bug from that point on. And this particular van, the history of this particular van, it is a West Coast van. I bought it in Arizona. I bought it in Arizona for two reasons. One is Arizona, it's obviously there's no rust. There was no rust on it whatsoever when I got it. And it was a very low mileage vehicle. So that was a double plus that I wanted to go out there and get it. Plus it was what I was looking for. But I just like the idea of being able to go and sleep anywhere I want. I had to go upstate last week to see my daughter, and I spent 2 days upstate New York. Right now we're on the Jersey coastline in Ocean Grove, Asbury Park, Ocean Grove. And I went to see my daughter, and I had no qualms about it. It was like, okay, I'm going. I'm out of here. I mean, she called me up. She said, come on up. I said, I'm on my way. And I went up there, and I spent the week up there. I camped out. I went to an RV park. I went driving around. I saw her. It was, you know, I did what I had to do. And it was like, because I know the vehicle so well and because it's set up for me the way I want it to be, it was really like being home. Yeah. And I got a chance to camp out a little bit, you know, in an RV park, which was kind of nice. So... And it was spur of the moment. I didn't really have to think about it. I didn't have to make a plan.
So the van's always packed and ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, this van basically it's always packed and ready to go. There are systems that you have to turn off and put back on. For instance, the refrigerator. I don't leave the refrigerator on when I'm gone. obviously, and I leave it open so that it doesn't, there's no mildew or anything involved, it gets inside it because it's used. And it's also hooked up to the electric of the vehicle. So what I'll do is I'll disconnect it from the electrical supply of the vehicle so it doesn't run down the batteries when I'm not using it. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty much everything in this vehicle I don't have to take out of this vehicle. The clothes that I have in this vehicle are the clothes that I'm going to use when I'm in this vehicle. So there's nothing that I have to, you know.
See, I'm new at this, and pretty much everything you said is dead on with exactly what I do. I have clothes specifically that I use in my camper van.
Yeah, right.
So I don't have to unpack and pack stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so. And, you know, the clothes that you're going to wear generally are going to be casual, very casual. I have one. If I have to do something which is less than casual, up a little bit, I have some clothes that I can wear to look, you know, proper if I'm going out to a proper dinner or something like that, you know. But very few. Most of them is just shorts, sneakers, sandals, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, but I've got a good pair of boots, good pair of pants. That's all you need, you know, and that's it.
What about insurance? You just have a regular RV insurance policy?
Well, I have the RV insurance policy, which is fairly inexpensive for some reason or another. I don't really quite understand why, but it's not very expensive. And then I have another policy for road service, which is great. I mean, if you're going to be in a vehicle like this, you want road service. You want towing service because you never know. There's always something that happens. I had, I was on the road, and I had a fuel pump issue. So they literally had to put this vehicle, this vehicle is, when you put this vehicle on a flatbed truck, it looks pretty big. You know, it's like, okay, that's not a car, you know. So I had the road service, so I would definitely recommend having road service. There's no question about it.
And any tips for internet, needing internet while on the road, anything that you came up with that, from learning from people online or just from usage?
Well, again, the places, my lifestyle in this van is, I hate to say that I'm a weekender, but I'm more like a weekender now, even though I just spent 3 weeks in here. It's not really a weekender, but I'm in an area where there's internet. I'm not out in the middle of Nevada somewhere, you know, where I'm going to have problems with it. I think that that's another thing that you want to think about. What, you know, how your internet needs, you know, what you're going to require from the internet and what you're going to, you know, require to use. I actually work every morning for about 4 hours. I actually work every morning on my computer. So I have a laptop, not a laptop, I have a an iPad that I use, and I do my work on that. And it's got a regular, it's cellular, so I don't have to worry about that. I have a cellular program with my iPad, so whatever work that I need to do, I can do via the cellular signal. I don't have to worry about Wi-Fi, which is nice to have.
I'm talking Dima, all clean, fit to me.
Hello YouTube, this is Sherrick from Sherrick Official Personal Vlog Channel on YouTube. If you haven't done...
I'm talking Dima all clean, fit to me. Finger all shiny on my baby's diamond ring. I was on a high till I caught onto the scene. Swear I lost my heart when I fell in love with things. Rookie year went broke like Jalen Rose. Got the price, sold my soul to the things I own. Switched up, locked in and got my mind.
Hello YouTube, this is Sherrick from Sherrick Official Personal Vlog Channel on YouTube. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to the channel by hitting the subscribe button down below. Push the bell-shaped icon known as the notification bell. Hit the thumbs up on the video because you already know you're going to love it. It's me. And when the video is over, comment down below with your thoughts and insights on this video and on any suggestions that you have for future video content. Share this video and share the channel link. Have a good one. Let's get to the video. Hello, YouTube. My son, my four children used to be homeschooled. Ever since their mother separated from me, they are now in public school because that's what the family court decided was best for them. But my son and my daughters and I continue to do homeschooling when they are here with me, particularly in the arenas of world history, because as a wise man once said, those who do not know their world history are doomed to repeat it, the bad parts of it or the good. So my son is obsessed with Alexander the Great, Napoleon, and other men from world history who have basically taken over what was at their time the known world. And he is always very disappointed that I have to tell him when he says he wants to do the same thing that the entire world is already dominated and that there's no more landmass really unconquered left to take over, and overthrowing an existing government at this point in world history is near impossible with the types of technological weapons that they possess via taxation theft from their own slave citizen groups. So my son challenged me to find a way to make him mobile floating islands so that he can take over and rule over a landmass with no violence necessary, and that the only citizens that would be part of that land are willful citizens that have to go out of their way to live there rather than be conquered like is the old way through world history and now. So, challenge accepted. Kids, public school science might be useless, but homeschool science will teach you how to take over the world. The 71% of the world is actually not Earth, but is water. So why do they call it the planet Earth? Why don't they call it the planet water? Anyways, let's get to the experiment. So what I'm doing right here is I'm digging a hole in a circle about a foot deep on a random patch of grass on my acreage. I'm going to hollow it out. I'm going to use a chemical mixture that I have found that will float heavy weights of mass that you put on top of it. Then I'm going to tarp over the solidified chemical mixture, and then I'm going to place this earth, compost, and plants back on top of it and float it in a horse watering trough I have as a miniature example of what one can do in the ocean with a large piece of land by using this chemical mixture and then placing tarp or pond liner on top, and then compost, soil, grass, trees, bushes, plants, and yes, houses. And to represent the house in this experiment, I'll probably use a brick or a cinder block to show how much heavy weight that this mixture can hold and float. So I'm just going to finish up digging of the piece of land we're going to use and the hole we're going to use. So this is going to be our island once we get it to float. Set our island over here, and we're gonna further hollow out this hole because that's what we're gonna use to mix our chemical. So let's hollow that out a little bit, give room for the chemical mixture to expand so that, like the good father that I am, I can make my son a king. Oh, my ghost decided to join us. Don't eat the island, Patsy. Can't allow you to eat the island.
remember to fill this hole back in when I'm done with this experiment, because this is one of the fields I sprint in. And I don't want to be twisting my ankle. But if all you got to do is twist an ankle, to help your son with his quest for global domination, then so be it. Once we create the large-scale island, we'll be releasing goats, sheep, chickens, turkeys, miniature cows, things like that, rabbits on it, because those things will be natural organic lawnmowers that also serve as a meat, milk, egg, and cheese source. So there you go. So here we go. Here's the hole we dug. Can't really tell how deep it is in a video, but it's about foot deep. Here's the pieces of land and grass and weeds that we pulled out of it. This is a piece of wood we're going to put on top of it to make the top of the island, when the chemical expands, turn out to be flat so we can place things on it, like soil and grass. And these are the mystery chemicals. This is one of my stray kittens. I let them live on my land. I water them, I don't feed them, and then they eat the field mice and rats for me and keep them from my house and out of my property. So all my animals are put to useful use on my property. But this is the mystery chemical mixture. I'll reveal it to you later if this experiment is successful, and I know it will be because, let's face it, I'm a genius. While I'm preparing that chemical mixture, you can watch my lawnmower in action. That is what I call an organic lawnmower right there. Okay. Let's see if this works. Let's mix these chemicals. Get our mad scientists on, children. Children and or equally as insane as me, adult men who want to help their children to take over the world. Sorry about that. That stray mousetrap cat that I was talking to you about knocked over the camera base. So, mix these chemicals together, as you may have saw, for that cat rudely knocked your view over. Mix it together really well as you can. Supposed to be using gloves. I have a glove on my other hand, but I had to take the glove off of this hand to grab the camera, fix it, and move that cat quickly enough for you guys to see this. So hopefully this does not get on my hands. Don't try this at home without gloves. Okay. See what happens, if anything. might not work because you're supposed to do this in a like a plastic or glass container. It's solid at the bottom, whereas I'm doing it in straight earth, clay, and all kinds of other natural things that may in some way react with this chemical and cause it not to do what I want it to do. But it looks like it's starting to work. See how it's turning white and expanding? That's what we want it to do. Let's see. Another quick shot of what is to be one of our island's natural organic lawnmowers doing its job. There's another natural organic lawnmower over there doing its job. And that over there, that silver thing you see in the middle of the land, that is a horse watering trough, which I will shortly fill up with water in a moment. It holds about 300 gallons of water. And that's going to play the role of our ocean to see if our island mass will float, hold soil, plants, and brick, which is to function as the weight of a house, hypothetically, and see if we can make us a mobile floating island on a micro scale. And then, if it works on a micro scale, we know that it will work on a macro scale. We'll simply have to up the level and amount of chemicals we use and the size of the hole that we dig, and then we'll make maybe a 20-foot by 20-foot mobile floating island to start out with, and probably float it on like, we're in Oklahoma, so we'll probably float it on like Lake Hefner near where my children's mother lives. I'll go pick them up from school one day, and we'll make one of these 20-foot by 20-foot long and wide and 2-foot deep. We'll put a tarp on it. I have an abundance of those on this land. We'll put some compost and some soil on top of that with some grass in it, some plants in it. We'll plant a vegetable garden on it, put a tent on it, and we'll have us a little 20-foot by 20-foot mobile floating island on Lake Hefner or Lake Overhoser for my kids to play on. And my son will have a small-scale idea of what he'll just have to do in a much, much larger size and amount to become what he wants to be, which is the next Alexander the Great or Napoleon, but Christian version. So, yep. Theonomists of the world that are always trying to figure out how to reform America or whatever country you happen to be in, instead of trying to do that from the bottom down or from the top up, either one of those methods, why not just create an island of your own that floats? Take it out to the equator where there are no sea storms or tsunamis or anything like that, where the weather is perfect year-round and there's no winter and it's like an Eden type of weather year-round for the most part. And why not just start your own theonomy and go ahead and invite any Christians that want to live there by God's law to live there? She is such a good lawnmower. Look at that. She's just mowing. See that? She's a lawnmower and a weed whacker. She just naturally comes to where the grass got too long, and she just mows it. I don't feed any of my goats or any of my sheep or any of my chickens or any of my turkeys or any of my rabbits. I don't do that. People ask why I don't do that. Well, who's feeding these wild animals in nature? Wild goats. There's a jungle fowl that is basically a wild chicken. Turkeys are wild in North America. Nobody feeds them. They eat grass, weeds, seeds from the grass and the weeds, and they drink water. So I water my goats, I water my sheep, I water my chickens, turkeys, rabbits when I have them, and I water my cats. And then other than that, all the herbivores on my lawnmowers and all the carnivores, like you see that cat doing over there, are my mouse traps. See, the cat's out there hunting. When there aren't any mice to eat because she's done her job too well, she eats grasshoppers and whatnot. So, let's see here. Is this done expanding? I don't think it's... Maybe it's done. Okay. Now it's not solidified as of yet. But I think that's about how big it's going to get. We'll give it a little while to expand some more. And then we'll cut back to it. And we're going to add the tarp to it. add some compost, some soil, and some grass to it. And then in the meantime, I will go fill up the horse watering trough so we can see this bad boy float on water. So now we're going to go to the horse watering trough. We're going to fill that up with water so that we have something to float our island. Okay, so this is going to be our miniature ocean in this experiment. Fill this bad boy up. Have that.
Hey, Byron. Hey, Sharnice. Welcome to the His and Her Money Show.
Hey, you guys.
Hello, hello.
We're glad to have you guys here, man.
Absolutely.
Y'all been making waves. Y'all been doing your thing. And
yes.
We came across you guys, and it was like, pump the brakes.
We
got to
get them on the show.
What did they just say?
Yeah.
You guys have found an expertise in the area of real estate investing that I know most people listening have not heard about. Because when we first heard about it, it was like, wait, hold up. Wait a minute. You can do that? So we absolutely had to reach out to get you guys on the show so you can share your story and your wisdom with the audience today. But for those who may not know who you are, can you just take a moment and say hello to everybody that's tuned in right now and let them know what you guys are all about?
Yes. So, hi, I'm Sharnice.
And I'm Byron.
And together we make up the Mobile Home Elite Investors. So, I mean, what we do is in our name. We're full-time mobile home investors. But then on the flip side, we also have an educational program to teach investors out there how to get started as well.
Okay.
Awesome.
Now, did y'all hear that?
So they invest in mobile homes.
Mobile homes.
And that's why I'm so excited to have them on the show, because I know that you guys, we've had quite a few people writing into us and they're loving the whole real estate thing that
yeah.
we have going on. But you guys also have an option to do this via mobile homes, right? And so we found a couple that is actually doing that. So first, tell us, how did you all even get started? Tell us a little bit about the backstory of how you guys actually got started into mobile home investing.
Yeah, so, man, March 3rd, 2017, that was the day I was fired from my job. And before that, I was trying to get into real estate for about 3 years. And the day before, I walked away from a deal because the basement had flooded. It was on the south side. And so now I'm thinking like, man, you know, what am I going to do? I got no job. How am I going to get a loan, a mortgage, and all this good stuff? And let's say times got hard about 3 months later. So now I'm driving rideshare, right? And I always listen to podcasts, right? Always listen to podcasts. I should have been listening to His and Her Money podcast at that time, right? But listen to podcasts. And one particular day, a podcast about mobile homes, I was driving and the couple in the back like, can you turn that off? Wow, we want to listen to music. So I'm like, okay, let me turn it. So I turned to Sharnice like, hey, listen to this. I think this one is going to be special.
Yeah, so he sent me that podcast, and it was a podcast. It was on Bigger Pockets. Don't remember the episode. It was about a couple of years ago. But that podcast was on mobile home investing. And like Byron said, at the time, we were both trying to acquire buildings here in Chicago. But due to capital, due to credit, that wasn't going to be our situation. So he sent me this podcast, and it was on mobile home investing. And the biggest thing I heard was you can start with low capital and very low credit. So that really stood out to me. So I came home and I actually started this. I said, hey, babe, we doing mobile homes. Like, I get it. You trying to do this thing with the buildings and everything. But I'm like, look, let's go ahead and go full force in a niche that nobody else is doing. And let's just see what we can do. And, man, we conquered it.
Yeah,
all right. I love that.
Okay. All right. So you guys are from the same city we're from.
Chicago.
Okay. So I've never seen a mobile home in the city of Chicago, right? So what made you, as you listened to this, made you say, this is something that we could do?
Yes. So the biggest thing, once we kind of started doing our research, that's when our eyes start opening up. Like similar to you, I was like, I don't think there's no mobile homes in Chicago. So we just dug right in and we started doing our homework, and I'm going to get the listeners. I'm going to give y'all some gems, okay? If you go to Google Maps and you type in mobile home parks, it would allow you to see all the mobile home parks all across wherever you're searching. And it lit up in Illinois. It was like, what? Is it this many mobile home parks?
Yeah, so, like right in our backyard, too, like close to the Chicagoland area, like parks that we've been looking over, like, oh, yeah, they're right here.
Yeah, so we mapped them out. We put them in an Excel sheet, and we just literally started driving for dollars. Like, that was what we engulfed in. We went full-fledged in. We drove down to Cincinnati to go look at a mobile home. So that's how bad we wanted it. And we knew, like, hey, we're going to find something.
Okay, now for people who have been researching, like they were like you said you spent 3 years trying to get into real estate investing before the mobile home investing thing popped up, right? So they might be in research mode and they hear about all these different strategies and ways by which you can invest in real estate. Why should they consider mobile home investing?
Great question. So for one, low entry costs, right? We tell people you can start as low as $5,000, low risk, right? When you're talking about when you're doing an investment from, let's say it's $20,000, right? But move-in ready $20,000, that's much different than getting a rehab at 60, putting another 50 into it, you're dealing with more money. Also, it's less strenuous, right? You're not really dealing, you can get a realtor, but you don't really have to. You're not really dealing with, the state of Illinois doesn't require inspections. A lot of states don't really require inspections of the mobile homes, and not saying that you should, you know, sell a lemon, but at the same time, you know, you're not dealing, you don't have to pay for a $400, $500 inspection, appraisals, all that added stuff that comes along with houses. You're not dealing with it. A mobile home is considered in most states a motor vehicle, right, or personal property. So with that, with those stipulations, you don't have as much responsibility with those.
Gotcha. So what do you say to people who say, they're investing in mobile homes, but it's not actually investing in the land, right? Like it's, I'm assuming that you guys, the way that you're making your money is off of rent. Is it still called rent for mobile? Okay. For mobile homes, is it still called rent when people rent them out, right? Okay, so talk about your process behind that, saying, I think that we can enter into the mobile homes and not necessarily physically buy a building, but you're buying a motor vehicle, as you mentioned, right? So talk about your game plan and why did you guys choose that route?
Right, so when we first got started, of course, we're in mobile home communities, so we're owning the homes, right? So kind of like what you just described, but not owning the land. So when we first started out, we focus on flipping the homes. And then, of course, now we also do rent-to-own cash flow. But for our first deal, we purchased a home for $3,700. We ended up flipping that home for $9,500 in less than 30 days. Okay, so that home was move-in ready. It was a three-bedroom, two-bath. We didn't have to do any rehab for our first home. Now, again, we always get the question, like, how did you guys find this? It was a lot of heavy prospecting involved with that first deal and also some negotiation, but it worked out. And again, we flipped that home. So now we ended up flipping it again, still paying the lot rent to the park because the park still owns the land, but we just went ahead and made the profit off of the home.
Yeah. And then similar to when you look at like the renting phase, we look at most cars, when you go get a new car, you're going to have a term of anywhere from 3 to 6 years, right? Similar, we do the same thing with our seller finance. So, you know, instead of tell people, listen, you've been renting an apartment, you don't have any equity in this. But if you get on this term from 3 to 5 years for this house, it's going to be yours. And a lot of times we educate people. So, for example, like a house, we got a house before right at $1,500, right? And we were only taking $400 a month, but we put them on a 3-year term for $400 a month. So it's still affordable housing because the lot rent at that particular park was right at $350, so they're paying $750 a month. We're cash flowing right that $400, but at the end of that term, they get to have their house. We pretty much quadrupled our money, but it's still affordable housing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you've thrown numbers out there like we got a spot for $1,500, we got a spot for $35, and turned it into $9,000. Okay. Okay. All right. Everybody's listening now, guys. How do you go shopping for a mobile home? And how do you determine what's a good price to pay for a mobile home? Is it similar to physical structures where you go and you look at comps You can see how many buildings in that area sold in the last 6 months. And, you know, you can kind of figure out what's a fair number. You can consider, you know, rehab costs. Do you apply that same mindset to mobile homes when you're prospecting? And how do you come up with your number?
All right, great question. So one of the biggest things we tell people, most of our deals come from literally driving for dollars. So we're in the parks looking for sale signs. We're going into the office, talking to a park manager. Hey, what do you have? You know, introducing ourselves, letting them know what service we can provide by helping them to occupy homes. And so with that, that's what a lot of online resources, Craigslist, a lot of different apps like Let Go and things like that you can go on. But the biggest thing is getting out there in the field. When it comes to comps, like you said, like traditional houses, the only thing you can compare is to the houses in the neighborhood. So the knowledge that we're learning from park managers, hey, are you guys getting cash buyers or are you guys getting people that need payments? And that can help us gauge, you know, are we going to do a flip or are we going to try to do payments? So my biggest thing is for us, we stand at a price range under the $5,000. Like, I don't care if it's a 2019, I'm not paying $40,000 for a mobile home because I'm finding 1991s for $3,000, you know, $3,000. So I'm like, yo, like, as long as we can keep finding these, we're going to stay under this price range. And so with that being said, like, when it comes to comps, normally what we do is if we get a house, if I buy a house at $3,000, I'm going to list it for $10,000, right? And I'm going to see, and because at the end of the day, if I get somebody to purchase for $7,000, it's still a huge win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So let's go back a little bit because I think that your story, both of your story, is so phenomenal in how you guys actually got started. So I don't want to skip over that. So you were driving. At this point, you lost your job, and you were driving, wasn't Uber, it was
Lyft.
Okay. So you were driving Lyft, and you heard this podcast. You sent it to your wife. Your wife did what she always does, what the woman always does. We get it done. She went home and was like, we're doing this. You all did that, right? So talk about the process from now losing your job, driving, and now owning a mobile home. So walk us through that process. What did you all do? Did you all find a realtor? Like, did you all do all of this yourselves? What did you invest in to learn the knowledge? What did you guys do to actually get your first deal?
Yeah, so really, I love that you said that's back up to the story part because I don't think I said that I had lost my job as well.
Wow.
Right, so we both had lost
wow.
our job. And I also, look, I call myself the app girl because at that point, I was on Lyft, Amazon Flex, Instacart, any app that you can log into your phone and make money. I was doing that because I was already in a mindset knowing that I didn't necessarily want to go back to a sit-down 9-to-5 job. I'm like, look, I'd rather hustle these apps until this mobile home thing just cooks up. So that's what I did. Byron, he had that same mentality. And yeah, when we first dug into the mobile home thing, like, we didn't get a realtor. Like, honestly, this was all us. This was us getting out in the field, researching, finding other potential investors who have done some deals. And just really like learning from the school of other hard knocks, like just really getting out there and just seeing it for ourselves.
Yeah, because it wasn't too much. It wasn't too much information out there at the time. You know, a few YouTube videos, and it told about a little how, but you had to invest in that program to learn more, and we didn't, right? And I would say that our biggest break where we learned a lot of information. So when we first started, like, we were cold calling parks. Like, Charnice had called at least like 175 parks. I called about 100, and we got so many no's, right? And the vice president of a company, which is the fifth, it was the fifth largest mobile home park company in the country, right? Worth $14 billion. The VP called Charnice and said, hey, you've been calling my parks. What's going on? And Charnice told him, like, hey, look, we new to this and everything. So he said, okay, cool. You know what? If you guys ever out in Denver, we would love to meet you guys and kind of like what you're doing. You got access to most of our parks. We
immediately booked that trip. Like, we got to get out there. I'm like, if he going to give us access, I'm like, come on, man. We got to get out there. So, yeah, so we sat out there. We sat down. And even in that meeting within itself, like, he gave us so much game and just so much, like, salute for us even, like, starting this, being African-American as well, coming into a niche where you don't see a lot of people who look like us. He even was like, man, you guys are doing the right thing.
Wow. I have so many questions. Wow. First off, that's incredible. I love that. Talk about favor, right? So I love that. So I have another question. How do these parks work? I'm assuming that they're sort of like condos in a sense, right? Where not all condo units allow you to rent out, right, their particular unit. So how does the whole part, how does that work?
Yeah, so really we always say you're looking for an investor-friendly park. Now most, so right, it's over 44,000 mobile home parks in the United States, right? In Illinois alone, we're 1198 right now. So 1,198 mobile home parks in Illinois. So right now, institutionally owned, 4,000, right? 4,000, so 10% of these parks are owned. So now all these parks are still, we call them mom and pop parks, right? They're still owned. They've been in the family since the 50s, the 60s. And so it really depends. Most of the institutional parks, they don't mind. They like investors because we help them sell homes, right? They're park manager. They don't have to sell homes or anything like that. So they lick their chops when we come in, like, yes, come. So the older mom and pop parks, they're more the ones that gonna give you more pushback because they want to keep all the margins. But then they look at it like, why should I sell you this home when I can turn around and make the same amount of money on the home? So that's when you get a lot of that pushback from, some of those parks. But again, when you get like Shiny Snap, we only do business in two parks now, and it keeps us fully, fully occupied.
How many mobile homes have you guys invested in yourselves personally?
So now we just hit that, we're right at that 25 mark.
Yeah, great.
Wow, man, in two years,
that's
right?
Great.
Going on.
Wow.
It'll be 2 years, January 2020. Yeah.
So who actually owns then the mobile homes? I know that we keep talking about parks and things like that. Like, who actually owns the mobile homes? Is it the parks? Are you buying it from the park?
Yeah, sometimes we can be buying it from the park itself, but other times we can actually be buying it just from individual sellers who just don't know how to sell their home, or they've been trying to sell their home for so long, and we come in and we offer, what we're going to pay for it.
Yeah, and so when it comes, like the ownership, like, so mobile homes are pretty much, again, just like a vehicle, so they have titles. Like in the state of Texas, they got, it's called like SOLs, mm-hmm. But they are titles. So, for example, in a mobile home park, when you're the title owner, you own that asset. But you're just renting the land, like how you said earlier about like a condo, you're just renting the land or leasing the land from the park. So you can technically move your home, right? But you don't see that many homes being moved like that. But you have the, you can definitely still move your home if you like.
Everyone knows why life insurance is important, but many of us choose to ignore the reality of what would happen if we were to die suddenly without proper protection. The results could be devastating for your surviving family members, leaving them with a large bill for your final expenses, or even worse, loss of the family home because they can no longer cover the mortgage.
Term life insurance gives you peace of mind at a price you can afford. Term life insurance allows you to meet your financial obligations today while still protecting your family's future tomorrow.
If you don't currently have a life insurance policy, you are not alone. According to Life Insurance Statistics and Facts, which is a report put out by the life insurance industry, about 43% of the population don't own a life insurance policy in any amount.
Wow. Buying life insurance doesn't have to be complicated. Legal & General America make it easy for you to protect your family's financial future.
As one of the nation's leaders in low-cost, high-quality life insurance to over 1.3 million families, they know how to protect you.
Legal & General America makes understanding and applying for life insurance easy. You can get a free quote by going to hisorhermoney.com/LGA. The links are also in the description box below.
So you all not only have done this for yourselves, but you taught a whole lot of other people how to do it as well. What do you see as common mistakes that people make when they try to become mobile home investors? Mm-hmm.
Moving too fast, not, getting the information and not looking through the entire information. Like one thing, like I was talking about earlier, some parks don't really want investors in there. Mm-hmm. So they will get a property and just hear the numbers like, oh, I see a property for $2,000, they'll buy it, and not knowing what to do with it. Or the biggest mistake I see is somebody's advertising a home needs to be moved, right, off their mm-hmm. property, and they don't have a home for it. So now you're stuck, you're trying to find a home, and you don't even know where this mobile home should be going.
Exactly, because I want to jump in as far as the moving, because when you see a lot of homes that need to be moved online, they're going to be advertised as free. So as a new investor, like, you're excited, like, oh my God, a free mobile home. But like Byron said, if you don't have a place for your home, then now you're stuck, especially if it's a free home that needs a lot of money as far as rehab. now you're really stuck. So at the end of the day, you got to have your beginning strategy and your end strategy no matter what the situation is for the mobile home.
Yes, definitely. And costs. I would say another thing is they don't really incorporate all the costs, right? We encourage that you've got holding costs, right? And it could be lot rent. You always want to have a cash reserve. Just because the house costs this much, just like a traditional house, if you got 150, but you know the budget, you still at least need another 175 or something like that, just to have that cash reserve, just in case anything goes wrong. And some people, you know, they don't really look at. They look at, oh, I got 2,000 right now. Let me go buy it, and still get holding costs. Mm-hmm.
So how do you guys find people to rent your mobile homes? Is it easy?
When you think about it, it doesn't seem like
you don't really hear.
It's
well,
like the sexy thing to do to go rent a mobile home, but obviously,
you
guys are killing the game. So obviously, there's people who are cool with who like mobile homes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys got to remember, we're from Chicago. So when it comes to like our market, it is a huge stigma when it comes to mobile homes. But like Byron said, it's over 44,000 mobile home parks, and it's also 22 million Americans still to this day that still lives in mobile homes. So when you think about people who are looking for this affordable housing, they're out there.
Yeah, and that's what I was about to say. I actually like it because I think that it's affordable, right? A lot of times it's probably even more affordable sometimes than renting, physically like renting, right, at a condo or something like that. So I love that option for you guys. So how do you all find people to rent these places?
Yeah, so the biggest thing we do, we create buyers lists. So, you know, just like we tell people, I'm going to give them some secret sauce on this one. All right. Just like you see, we buy houses, we buy mobile homes. You put it around the neighborhoods, right? That's how we get it. And then we'll put up different ads for houses. We'll test the market out. So we'll put out some houses out there in that market and start collecting data. We're real big on collecting data, right? I want to know, you know, what do you work at? How long you been working there? How much you make a month? What's your credit looking like? Because now that can help me determine how can I help you the best. And so normally you can have a great relationship with a mobile home park as well. Our park managers are sending us leads. So they call us when people need help. They call us when people need help to sell their house. And they're calling us when people, because they get people coming to the park all day, every day looking for affordable housing. So they'll let us know as well.
All right. Now you talked about different costs that we need to consider outside of the purchase. So you mentioned like $1,500, $3,000, $5,000, right, to get a home. Then on the back end, because these prices sound like unbelievable, right? How much work then are these mobile homes look like?
On average,
rehab,
how much are you putting
into
a mobile home? Yeah. To like get it fixed and turn it around.
Make it nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for us, our formula, we look at we best look at move-in ready homes, meaning like I don't want to pay no more than $2,000 to put into the house. Yeah. Normally a full gut, like if you're like a type of, hey, I'm like a DIY, a full rehab on a mobile home, like that is just, you're on a high-end $12,000. And most mobile home parks don't even spend that. They'll rather scrap that home or get a new home versus spending that. So for us, we encourage people to try to stay under that $4,000 range. Like if it's livable, if somebody already lives in it, and you got to come in and do just cosmetic work, right? Just maybe, you know, replace a toilet or some floors or things like that. Stay under that $2,000, $3,000 mark at most. And then the other holding cost, lot rent, right? We talk about the HOA fees. The average lot rent in America is $375. So, you know, we always tell people put at least 3 to 4 months aside a lot rent just in case. But the goal is to sell the house way before those four months or so. And then just always have a cash reserve, you know, what if a window gets broke or something like that, right? You know, you just want to have some little extra cash just in case money. But it's really not a lot, right? Again, I'm still talking numbers under, you know, $4,000 to the side just to have safety, a good cushion.
So is your process, do you guys just buy these to turn around and flip them? Or are you holding them?
We do both. So when we first started, we mainly focused on the flipping because we got to keep making money to reinvest. But as you know, our processes got better, our strategy got faster, then we started the holding process.
Gotcha.
Wow. Now, who collects the rent? Because I've never heard a property manager that deals with mobile homes, but you said there's a park manager. So are you collecting the rent? Is the park manager collecting rent? What's that like?
So if we have them on terms, right, let's say, you know, we have them on a term. So it's split up, right? They pay the park their portion of the lot fee. fee. Then they pay us. All of our stuff is online, right? They can either pay directly into our bank account, but most we have everybody paying online. Again, I'm giving y'all some gems. We use Cozy.co, which is pretty much just a free landlord, website. So, we get our payments. They pay, and only time they got to hear from us is they don't pay out. You know, they after the fifth, that's when they're gonna have to get that phone call.
I like that. Now, Talk about, because you guys are 25 or so properties in, I'm curious as to how do you decide, because you all do this full time, how do you all decide we're going to bring this much home versus we're going to reinvest this much? Like, how do you take proceeds from property A and move it to try to get property B and property C? What does that look like?
Man, so the cool thing, man, shout out our guy Malcolm, man, our economist. He kind of helped us structure where our account. So in that business, our account is set up where when a profit comes, all right, we give ourselves 50%. So we have that 50%. We allow 30% for expenses, and then we put 15% to the side of that for taxes, and the rest of that 10% is profit. So from us, we really actually, instead of really paying ourselves, a lot of times we taking that money that we paid ourselves and we going right back out there and reinvesting, because it's addictive, man. I ain't gonna lie, it's addictive. Right.
So how long did the process take you guys for both of you, both lost your job, right? And you all were working hard to try to bring income into the household. How long was the process from that point to you guys actually just getting full-fledged into this mobile home investing?
So really, I would say for myself, it took about close to like a year and 4 months for the turnaround.
I feel like mine was fast. Like Byron always jokes and says, like, man, I just jumped into this entrepreneurial journey, because it literally took me like less than 6 months. Like, he can tell you, like, I was full force, but I told him, like, I was not going back to a desk job. So that just was not going to happen for me. So, yeah, I went full force into mobile home investment.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, when you start having those months, you know, our first month we made that $19,500. Mm-hmm. Then the next month, you know, it was slower to us, but the next month we made it $12,000. Mm-hmm. Then the next month, it was like it was going down at first. And the next month we made $7,000. But it was still good, because, like, yo, this is sustainable for both of us. Mm-hmm. And then we picked back up. And then once we launched the educational piece, that kind of made us kind of go harder, because it was like, okay, while we're teaching people, we got to show them as well.
Yeah,
so, so better deals came, more opportunities came, and, it's been fun.
Love that.
Nice.
Talk about your help. So talk about the people that you all have to have in place to help you all run this company. I'm assuming you all have a good accountant, right? So talk about some of the people.
Rehabbers.
Yeah, right, rehabbers and things like that. Talk about some of your team.
Yeah, so the cool thing, when we first started, it was straight family. You know, her father, his friend, I had an uncle that kind of did some of the investing as well.
My mom is also an accountant, yeah. So I had her looking at some of our stuff in the beginning. Yeah, it's like, it was strictly just family at first.
Yeah, and as we expanded, then we got a team. Even our team right now, our team is five guys. If we need a rehab, we don't use them that much. They kind of get mad at me because I don't really have work for them like that. But, you know, as far as that, you know, with the accountant, we end up reaching out. We got a great accountant / you could say business consultant. Mm-hmm. And honestly, now we automated a lot of things. Automated, you know, CRMs are huge when it comes to the business. And so it kind of allows us to, we created a system where it's, even our homes, like when it comes, if we purchase a home, we mainly go to the home maybe three times before we actually sell it. And, I mean, literally, we showing up to purchase it. We might go out there to take a look and see what we need. And after that, we sending everybody else out there, put their lockbox on there. And then when it's time to close, that's the last time we see in that house.
Talk about the purchase for those who may be looking at purchasing. Are there loans? Are banks giving loans for mobile homes? Or is this cash buyers, right? Is this all cash? How's the financing, or if there is financing at all with it?
Nice. So most banks do not lend a mobile home. So that's why that nice guy, Mr. Warren Buffett, he got involved in this business. So he owns two of the largest mobile home lending companies, 21st Mortgage and Vanderbilt Mortgage Company. So he lends to people who are looking for newer mobile homes. And that's why we offer seller financing, because we understand that most people, they can't go get a bank loan. So with us, we look at it like, let's become the bank. And, you know, with us owning this asset, we can create not only passive income, but we still create affordable housing, and it's a win-win for us all.
So let's break that down. So you buy a mobile home with your money, then you find someone to technically be a renter for a while, but they are paying to get to an endpoint to where they become the owners from you. That's what you mean by seller financing, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. Now, let's talk about, because you mentioned accounting, let's talk about the tax implications. Because with the traditional way of flipping, let's just say flipping the house, right? The property or the proceeds that you get, there's capital gains taxes, and you got to account for that, or you got to roll the proceeds into a 1031 exchange to put those taxes off to the side for later on. How does that work with mobile homes? Because earlier you said it's not considered a house, it's considered a motor vehicle. So when you find a mobile home for three and then you flip it at 9 or 10, what are the tax implications for you?
Oh man, I love it. So first I'm gonna talk about the property taxes, or I guess you could say, yeah, the property tax of the mobile home. So in Illinois, I remember when we didn't really know, we kind of thinking higher taxes. When we first went to go pay taxes for the mobile home, we in Loves Park, and they said, okay, yeah, the taxes for the year, $167. We like, what? $167
in Chicago?
So we like, cool. So then again, a story about Indiana. One time I go, they tell me I have back taxes on the house. I'm like,
oh
man,
so stressed out, you guys.
I'm like, yo, so let me, how much lay it on me? They said $37. I say, what
a year.
You're not watching the YouTube. You can only see their faces.
I pulled out them two 20.
Yeah, real fast.
Real fast, like, here you go.
So you change your mind and change that number, right? I love it.
So normally, so for most, all of our houses, we definitely put the title. I mean, we've learned, you know, to really protect our assets, we put our titles in our LLC, then we roll that over to a trust. So for each individual house, you know, I mean, our accountant has it. I'm not sure what exactly they do, but of course the profit that we gain, we pay taxes for that at the end of the year. But I mean, the taxes on the houses are little to nothing.
And last tax type question, just out of curiosity, do you get any of the same tax advantages like appreciation, depreciation, things like that? Or is that out the window because this is, again, considered a motor vehicle?
Yeah, that's the only drawback. Yeah, you're not getting any tax breaks, anything like that. If there is, man, listen, if you're listening, please let let them know here.
But what I love about this strategy, though, is that is, because they say in real estate investing, cash flow is king.
Yep.
And so with mobile home investing, you have the potential to make some great cash flow,
mm-hmm.
you know, just off a few deals,
mm-hmm.
and low barrier to entry. So I think that's what's super dope about what you all are doing and what you all are teaching. So somebody listening right now is like fired up. They're like, man, I'm getting in this game. He had back taxes of $37. Let me in. Open the door. Let me in. What's your advice to that person that's listening, that's chomping at the bit to get started? How do they get started the right way?
Yeah, so, I mean, of course, we always tell you about educating yourself, right? Just you know, utilizing the resources that not only we have, but that are out there for you. But the biggest thing is get out there. Like finally, we talked about the Google Map search. You know, go to Google Maps, search mobile home parks, see those, map them out, put them in an Excel sheet, and start getting out there. Just start getting acclimated. Start taking a look. Don't be scared. A lot of people try to do this straight from their laptop and their phone.
No. And I always tell people, you have to get out in the field. Like, we get people that kind of message us and call us like, is it okay to get out the car? I'm like, yes, get out the car. Don't introduce yourself to the sellers. Like, that's what you have to do in this business. This is not an online business. You got to get out in the field.
Oh.
Great advice.
I guess maybe the parks handle this. How do you guys handle like snow and is there grass and things like that? Like, who takes care of the land? Is it the mobile park land? What do you call them? Landowners?
Yeah.
Are they the ones that take care of it?
So you are responsible for that pad. So when we first started, that was about building relationships. We had to find out like for myself, I always find like a young kid. If I see a young kid, I'm like, hey, you got Cash App or you got anything? If you make sure my lawn is mowed, you know, I'm going to pay you $30 every time you mow it. You know, same snow, you don't really have to worry about. We had our first, like, it wasn't really that costly because, again, plumbing, we had like some pipes that froze on us. Again, in a regular house, could you imagine how much that cost? That only cost us $750. But now it's because it was memorable before, right before that, like that cold polar vortex that we had.
Yeah.
Our window broke.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was that cold.
It was that cold.
Yeah, it was that cold. But the gas company did not come the day before because we were trying to get the gas cut on so we can keep the heat on, keep, you know, make sure the water's running. But they didn't come out in time and that froze. So normally, I mean, really a tip for you guys, if you, and, you know, of course, the climate where it gets really cold, you definitely want to make sure that heat is running and just kind of just keep a faucet running, you know, throughout the house to kind of make sure you keep that flow of water going.
Awesome. Well, I know that a lot of people are like, oh my goodness, I want you guys to teach me. So tell everybody first, where can they find you and what are some of the tools and resources that you guys have to actually teach them how to do this as well?
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, honestly, we got several things. We got ebooks. We got courses. We rolled out group coaching. We have a Facebook group. But listen, they can find us. They got to make sure they go to hisandhermoney.com/mobile-home. So that way you can get that course.
Love it. Awesome. So we'll make sure that we have the links in the show notes. Go to hisandhermoney.com/mobile-homes. But also, where can they find you guys at online?
Yeah, y'all big on IG. Tell them about that.
Oh, man. So, yeah, you can find us on IG at Mobile Home Elite Investors. Same name on Facebook, at Mobile Home Elite Investors. And then subscribe to our YouTube as well, and that's MH Elite Investors.
Awesome.
All right.
Have all the links?
We'll put all the links down in the show notes. Man, Byron, Sharnice, number one, salute to y'all.
Yes, good job, you
because
guys.
Because y'all had crazy resilience. Y'all didn't let things, like, take you. You let the hard times inspire you to be better.
I love it.
So that in itself is an inspiration to us and to everybody listening. And then kudos for you all for figuring this out and then being kind enough to now turn it around and sharing what you've learned to help other people elevate as well. So salute to you guys. Thanks so much for sharing with our audience.
Thank you.
Thank y'all for having us, man. Y'all phenomenal. Keep doing what y'all rock stars. I love it.
Yeah.